This is a three-part episode. Come back next Wednesday for part two.
Say the worst day of your life occurs, and that bad guy comes into your house, and you have another kid too. I said, and you take the rounds or you get hurt instantly. The only thing stopping an 11-year-old from becoming a victim against a full-grown bad guy could be that firearm. I said, and it's crazy to think like that, but like, that's real life. Like, why wouldn't you want to give your kid every opportunity to succeed?
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners? Homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
What are you most thankful for?
Just to be alive. You know, it's something I think that people take for granted. So I like to start every day like checking the box. There's a win. Let's roll.
Yeah. Be thankful for the little wins. You know what I mean? For the little things in life, and being alive is one of those for sure. Yeah.
It's kind of important.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, we'll jump right in. In this episode, we have Patrick Conahan, the founder and CEO of 717 Armory, a former United States Marine combat veteran with three deployments, two to Iraq and one to Afghanistan. He's also a former private security contractor and a lifelong Central Pennsylvania native. Patrick is also a husband to his wife, Whitney, a father to his son, Asher, an avid hunter, golfer, and motorcycle rider. And someone whose entire professional life has revolved around discipline, safety, and responsibility. And for the listeners, back in, I believe it was 2018, I actually purchased my first firearm at 717 Armory when you guys were located right on Derry Street there. It was a Ruger SR-22 with the American flag, and I always mess this word up, Caracotta finish?
Cerakote.
Oh yep. My God, I was way off. So, you know, this conversation has definitely been a long time coming. And, you know, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sully, thanks for having me down here. It's a pleasure. Like you said, it has been a long time coming. Yeah, we're going to dive into some major life events that have occurred at 717 Armory. Kind of postponed it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah, exactly. No, here we are. And it is. It's been a long time coming. I know you and I had messaged through social media, and I've been a longtime follower and so on. And I'm glad you're here. I really do appreciate it. And thank you for the gifts, by the way. Thank you for the goodies. For the listeners, got a kick-ass camo hat, 717 Armory, long sleeve hoodie, and a t-shirt. There will be photos on American Grown Podcast, Facebook, and Instagram for you to check out after the show. So, Patrick, let's start off. You know, you're born and raised in Harrisburg. Just about, I think, roughly a mile or two from 717 Armory, where you're at now. Take us back. You know, what was it like growing up?
Well, so it used to be the original location there at 7500 Dairy Street was the old Star Roller Skating Rink. So growing up on the hill in Rutherford, you know, that was the first thing as a, you know, young rebel.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Mom, I'm going to the skating rink. I need 10 bucks. And, like, you know, that's where you went for the first time by yourself, really, in large crowds of people. So, you know, memories dating all the way back. And then, you know, even further back, you know, that Star Roller Skating Rink was there when my parents were growing up.
Oh, wow.
So, like, we have, like, generational memories. And then, you know, the building sat vacant for, man, over a decade.
Long time.
It was just kind of, you know, rotting away. And you know, there's a local bar right down the street called The Wharf. It was one of my trips home between Iraq or Afghanistan. I can't even remember. Me and a bunch of my friends were sitting in there, and as cliche as it sounds, you know, I said, I'm going to buy the Star Roller Skating Rink and turn it into a gun range. And I drew it on a napkin, and I wish I would have kept the original napkin. But from memory, you know, I pretty much built exactly what I drew that day. So the whole swing of it, just to like repurpose something that, you know, always stood out in my memories growing up, to repurpose it to something that Dauphin County never had. You know, it never had an operating firearms range like we had, especially open to the public, that was full service. You know, so to implement something like that, we didn't really, I didn't understand the reach and the effect. You know, we had customers that would come from the Pocono region, from, you know, Shippensburg region, from Southern York County, you know, Lancaster, you know, from all over, just because of the facility that we provided, the staff, the knowledge, the experience that we provided, the safe environment for training. You know, so as it grew and started getting its own thing, I guess, you know, I was just always in awe of how many people came to it and how many people post, you know, the fire miss it. And, so it's been a tough year and a half ish, trying to reorganize and reface the business, to being just a retail store now versus the retail store and the gun range.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would say it was definitely a landmark, right? For anybody that was a gun enthusiast, in, you know, central PA, because it stood so prominent, you know what I mean? And like you said, there was nothing really like it in that general vicinity. So, you know, if you're interested in firearms, you wanted to go to a nice range, something that was clean, professional, and, you know, you wanted to get the proper training, where else would you go? 717 Armory.
Yeah, and I mean, that's when, you know, when we're getting it all started, it was like, okay, we need a saying, we need a lingo.
Okay,
and,
catchphrase, right?
A hashtag, whatever you want to call it. I'm not a marketing guy by any stretch of the means, but, you know, we're kicking around a bunch of ideas and stuff, and, you know, I employed a lot of family, I employed a lot of friends, some of my military, like guys I served with, relocated from out of state, you know, a bunch of other veterans. We're kicking around a bunch of stuff, and the vision that I had for this, other than, you know, selling stuff, was I wanted to teach people. That's what I love to do. I you know, when it comes to firearms, you know, there's such an apprehension to it, especially for the first time shooter, especially for the first time female shooters. So how do I cater something to help ease them through that process and show them that, hey, like, this isn't anything to be scared of. This is a tool that you need to have in your toolbox.
Oh yeah.
For who knows what. And we were just kind of spitballing ideas around, and, you know, yeah, I forget if it was me or somebody else. I was like, learn, shoot, repeat. And that's our motto, is, you know, because you learn, you take what you learned in the classroom, you know, from the instructors or whatever, and then you go actually into the range. You physically are implementing what the textbooks and the verbal teaching has, you implement it, and then it's repeat. And then that cycle, whether it's shooting, life in general, anything, you know, that motto to me runs deep, is, you know, I'm always trying to learn something. I'm always trying then to implement what I've learned, and then just keep repeating that process over and over again.
And I think that's a great life lesson too, like learn, shoot, repeat. You know, it doesn't have to just be firearms. It's anything you do in life, right?
Yeah.
You want to learn it. You want to execute it and then repeat that so you can fix whatever you might have missed or done incorrect, and then you just get better at it. And I would say you definitely hit the nail on the head, whether it's a female first-time shooter or a male or anyone. You know, firearms, I think, can be intimidating, especially if you haven't grown up around them, right? Like, I have a good buddy, Dylan, shout out to Dylan. He's a big-time listener. He's one that got me into firearms, and he grew up with it, hunting and such. He grew up in the coal regions up north. And the first time I went shooting with him, you know, and he's very, you know, I think sometimes firearm enthusiasts or people that own firearms get a bad rap, you know, they're extreme, you know, but very professional, handled it very carefully and educated me into, okay, you have to respect, you know, it is a tool, but you respect it. And it's not something to be afraid of, you know, the firearm itself isn't going to do anything unless you execute it, you do it yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, you circle it back to the mainstream media and let's go out to like the 10,000 foot view. It's blame the gun, blame the gun, blame the gun. Mm-hmm. A gun is an inanimate object. It'll never do anything.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Until the human puts input into the weapon system. Whether that is a vehicle, whether that is a firearm, a knife, a bat, it doesn't matter. Inanimate objects don't kill people. People kill people.
Yeah.
And that's tough because, you know, like you're mentioning, like you didn't grow up with firearms. I have a 3.5-year-old that has his own .22 and loves shooting it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so like, that is like the big difference. And you know, a lady came in yesterday, she got two young kids at the house. She wanted a firearm to protect the house.
Now super, more than ever, right?
Super worried about the kids. Yeah. And this is what I said to her. I said, my child gets me in trouble if I'm irresponsible with my firearms. And what I mean by that is, you know, life. Come home, I've got my gun in my holster. You know, instead of setting it on top of the refrigerator where I know he can't like easily reach it, he has to actively do something to get it. You know, I left it on the kitchen table and forgot to set it up there. Well, my 3-year-old, rather than grab the gun, yeah, says, "Dad, you're in trouble." And then, well, "Mommy, Daddy left his gun on the table." Right, and I'm like, "Yo, bro, like, come on, like, help a brother out here.
Throw you under the bus."
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, dude, you want to go shoot your gun, but you're getting Daddy in trouble.
Yeah.
It's so, like, that's my 3-year-old, right? And then I've seen 33-year-olds that probably shouldn't be around a firearm.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, like, it's a cultural thing. In my opinion, a lot of stereotypes go into stuff. And we don't tell parents how to parent. We tell them all that. You know, we're not going to tell a parent how to parent. But what we are going to tell you is if it is in the home, it would behoove you to teach the children basic firearm safety. Because if you're super responsible 100% of the time and never make a mistake, but never teach them about it, maybe it's not you. But when they go to Jimmy and Johnny's house and that gun's laying out.
Right.
And they never learned it from the responsible parent. And then an issue happens. Whose fault is it? And I just ask them and get them thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, that's my stance, you know, and the guys that work for me, we all kind of share maybe not the same exact opinion, but you know, we're in a degree of each other, on how to approach the situation when it comes up to especially children in the house and stuff like that. And, you know, this mother yesterday, I said, you know, her son, I think she said, was like 11.
Okay. So
not super young. And I said, well, think about it this way. Say the worst day of your life occurs and that bad guy comes into your house and you have another kid too. I said, and you take the rounds or you get hurt instantly. The only thing stopping an 11-year-old from becoming a victim against a full-grown bad guy could be that firearm. I said, and it's crazy to think like that, but like, that's real life. Like, why wouldn't you want to give your kid every opportunity to succeed?
Give him a fighting chance.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, because like, you know, you're a big dude. You can grab an 11-year-old and that 11-year-old's done. That 11-year-old swings a gun in your direction. They've leveled the playing field
100%
immensely.
Yeah.
Whether they even use it, maybe just pointing it in your general direction.
Intimidation right there.
Yeah. Like, you know, you point a gun at me, if I know how I'm going to respond, because I've been there. I've, you know, served overseas. Like, I'm kind of committed to what I'm going to do. But a lot of people aren't, and they don't ever face a reactive force against them. because they're so used to being the dominant mm-hmm. force by, you know, proposing their will as with bad intentions. So it's just food for thought, you know, when you're talking about firearms in the house. And I could tell you, my 3-year-old this morning at 5:44 in the morning, "Daddy, can we go shoot the gun?" And I'm like, "Buddy, it is dark out.
That's wild." Yeah.
And he's like, "But Daddy, go when the it. Sun comes up, can we go shoot the gun?" And I'm like, "Asher, I'm sleeping. Go back to bed." Yeah. Like, yeah, dude,
just give me some time.
Yeah. We'll talk about
that's
this
awesome, though.
When the sun comes up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I mean, but that's how I kind of grew up. You know, I was come from a very big hunting family. You know,
yeah.
First rifle, I was probably 7-8 years old. And just, it was a thing.
Yeah.
And so were all my friends. You know, it was nothing for all the dads to grab 10-year-olds and go away for the weekend. A couple cases of beer, a couple cases of guns. And
right.
That was deer camp. And that was one of the my best memories ever was I got to skip school like 3 times a year.
Okay.
Skip school one day to go to the farm show. Skip school farm one show. Day to go to the outdoor show with my
dad.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then I got to skip one day to go to deer camp.
That's PA like, right there.
Yeah. And then, that's you know what I'm saying?
Like, growing up in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's what it was. And 100%. So like I look forward to passing that on to my kid. And I want parents to feel comfortable having guns in the house. And then, you know, you can get into the safety measures and a whole bunch of other stuff. And, you know, we can dispute and debunk and think outside the box on all of them. But at the end of the day, it's what are you comfortable with?
Yeah.
And how proficient are you? Because that's where I think the ball gets dropped. Someone buys a firearm and it goes in the safe and they think that they can use it, they can implement it, they can grab it when they need it for the 3 a.m. the door kicks open. Like, that's not real life.
Right.
That's not how
that
works.
If you're not training, if you're not training on it, no.
Well, especially you start incorporating safes and other things.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I left my key downstairs on my car keys.
Well, now what are you going to do?
Yeah. Hold on, bad guy.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
Let's rewind. I got to grab my keys real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it don't work like that. So just to be able to think, you know, clearly on the what ifs mm-hmm. and then have solutions ready to implement against them.
Yeah. Let's take a sip break. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer.
I told you I'm pretty good at this.
Mm-hmm. You should consider starting here. I don't know if that's something on the horizon, maybe. But
I thought about it.
Yeah.
Well, we almost did it across the street. And
yeah, I thought that's where you guys are at. I looked you up. Yeah,
you're so we're literally right across the street.
In the back there?
Yeah, in the back of Weaver's glass building. But when we had the range going, it was just, it didn't have the appropriate structure of personnel to relieve myself of enough to like
to do this. Yes. Yeah.
You know, because like this is not something that you just start.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it takes time.
Especially do it right. Yeah.
Well, and I don't know anything about this shit. Like, I could come sit in here and do all this. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
The editing and.
But I don't even know how. Yeah. Like, I don't even know how to do YouTube video, like, post a YouTube video.
Yeah.
But we always had a concept ready because in the military, you know, one of the jargons was like, anybody got any saved rounds? So, like,
okay,
the literal term of that is if you're on a range shooting and the range is done, anybody got any saved rounds? That means you still are holding live ammunition. You download it so that you're not taking it back to where you live. Well, you go into a brief, you go into an after actions, you go into whatever. At the conclusion of it, whoever's running it says, anybody got any saved rounds? It's any questions, any comments, any concerns? And so I was going to start a podcast called Saved Rounds.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was what my vision was.
You should. I love that. That concept, that name.
Yep.
That's very unique.
Well, and you can just tie it into so many different things.
Oh, yeah. Across the board.
So, but I think it's I kind of have a range back to do it. But we'll see.
Yeah. If you need any help, you know, or need any tips or what equipment, you know, God, that'd be so cool. Yeah. So, and we can keep that part in.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't want to, like, if you're, I don't want to give it away and then all of a sudden somebody's like takes it, you know.
Say, right. I don't know.
Yeah, you should do it though.
Yeah, I have no idea.
All right, you should definitely do it. But I do want to talk about it, kind of like to pick back up. You know, how did you get into the military and your time in the military? You graduated from Bishop McDevitt in like 2004.
Yep.
And enlisted in the Marine Corps in 2006. So what pushed you towards the Marines and why the military? Is the family all service members or?
No, I mean, my grandfather's did like time, like, you know, Army something, but no, like it was between, you know, Vietnam and stuff. And so like, but now I'm the only one.
Okay.
In my family. And then so after I graduated, I went to a stint up at Pennsylvania College of Technology. And it was always, like, I always watched, you know, war movies and stuff growing up. And mm-hmm. I was always, if you're going to do it, go be the best. And it's the Marine Corps. Marines, like, yeah. You know, when you think of it, like, the uniforms, just the whole nines. And then, you know, when you start reading history and learning about what the Marines have done against adversaries that they believe that only the Marines could defeat.
It seems impossible, right?
Yeah. And, you know, even back to, like, you know, Mont Blanc and Bella Woods, okay. You know, you're talking, like, 100 of Marines versus, like, 5,000, 10,000 Germans and, like, they held the line.
Wow.
And like, yeah, just crazy stuff like that. And I'm sure the Army, you know, they've got their heroes and, you know, fortunately for them, they always have the Marine Corps because we're their heroes.
Yeah.
That's for all you Army guys out there. Yeah.
That's great.
And,
yeah,
but no. And so, you know, I was going to Peng Tech and, you know, 2005, 2006, you know, you had Ramadi and Fallujah just getting it and it's all over the news. And I just, I don't know if I'd say a calling or whatever, but I just woke up one day and was like, man, fuck this.
Really?
So like, let's do something important.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, like, turning wrenches is important because it is, but, like, it just wasn't for me. And drove down, met with the recruiter, only talked to the Marine Corps recruiter. That was it. And a couple of weeks later, off to Paris Island we went. Wow. And went to boot camp in January of 2006. In January 2007, I landed in Al-Takaitum, which is just outside of Fallujah, between Fallujah and Ramadi. Off to the races. First combat deployment. And I was a machine gunner. So my first deployment, you know, was on top of a Humvee with a 50 cal. And it was just, I can remember the very first patrol. And I was up in the turret, and I mean, I was just fucking terrified, like terrified. I did not want to get blown up by an IED.
Right.
I didn't want to lose my legs. I definitely didn't want to lose my dick. Like, you know, like
the important things.
A lot of things going on. Like, okay, it was a big bomb and a lot of metal.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I can remember we pulled out and we started heading, I guess that would have been west towards Ramadi. And we were on this main MSR. And we're going down, and yeah, you know, the Humvee,
MSR,
main service road or some shit like that. It's just like a 2-lane highway, essentially, but it's like a hardball paved road. And so we're rolling down the road, and we were doing a rip, and a rip is the unit that was there is still there. And the unit coming in, you're basically doing left seat, right seat with those guys. And I can remember me and the gunner, that was leaving. He was like, I said something. I was like, well, how many times have you blown up? And he was like, I stopped counting after five.
Holy shit.
Fuck me, dude. Like,
wow.
Here we go.
Stop counting after five.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, you're rolling down the road and it's war. And it was just, it was crazy. Like, it was crazy to think there I am. I think I was probably like 19, 20 at most. And like, I'm in a fucking war.
Yeah.
Like, people are actively trying to kill me and I'm going to try to kill them. Like, and that concept, I don't want to say I fell in love with it, but there was a part of it that was like just love. And I don't say that lightly because it's a part of me that will never go away. But it's got its good days and it's got its really fucking bad days.
Mm-hmm.
But any veteran that I at least know, you know, you surround myself with, hey, would you go back in a fucking heartbeat? Vietnam guys. Would you go back in a fucking heartbeat? So what else, what other than love do you call that? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's weird. It's a, you know that you could die. You know that your friends could die. You know, like a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fuck it. Let's go do it, man. Strap up. Yeah. And so, you know, I just kind of took that all in, and it was on the very, very first patrol. I distinctly remember it, like talking about it. I can feel the heat on my face. I can hear the sound of that Humvee. You know, I can remember going through, it was called Outcast. It was an Iraqi army area of operation. And like there was a bridge, and like that was the start. And basically the rule was from this bridge to Ramadi, you're probably going to get shot at, blown up, and fucked with.
Damn.
And I was like, cool. Here we go.
Here we go. We're in it. Yeah.
And I remember watching the bridge coming at me, and I'm like,
what's going through your mind? Just, yeah.
Fuck me. Like, fuck me.
Yeah, what else is going through?
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, yeah. All right, let's do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's
go.
Let's do this. This is what we're here for. Yep. And then, you know, you kind of like make peace with it. You stop worrying about it. Like, yeah, I mean, when you're going out, like, fuck me, I hope we don't get blown up today. But it's more of like a, man, I hope it doesn't rain today.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? It's just a part of it. And so,
expected almost. Like, you know what you're getting into. You know.
Well, yeah, you do and you don't. And that's what's crazy.
Yeah.
Because, like, tactics are always changing. Both your side, their side. You know, there's so many other non-controllables that go on. And one of the best quotes that, you know, we lived by was, the best laid plan goes to shit the first round downrange. So it's like, cool. So we just wing this. Yeah, basically, but rely on your training. And like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And then the first round goes downrange and all fucking hell breaks loose. And everybody just kind of clicks into this mode and is just doing it. And then like you all get together afterwards, and especially if no one gets hurt, a lot of laughing, a lot of joking going on about it. And it's a sick, dark, sadistic humor.
Yeah.
But it's a coping mechanism, because what else are you going to do, man? You just in a raging firefight. Like,
right. Adrenaline's through the roof. Yeah. Like, you got to decompress.
You got to decompress somehow, some way. Yeah. And, but yeah, I would say that, yeah, the Marine Corps, it definitely shaped me to the man I am today. 100%. It definitely set me up for how I evaluate life. Right. Now, if you ask my wife, one of the main things that I lack, and I tell her all the time, I don't even know what the word means, empathy. And when we get into it about it, I just look at her and I'm like, they didn't teach that in boot camp.
Yeah.
You know, I work on it. I try. But like, I just don't have it in me. Like, I it'd be like you trying to say, hey, I need you to speak Chinese to the Chinese restaurant. Like, great. I really want to. Like, I really want to order my food.
Yeah.
But I don't know Mandarin.
You can't.
Yeah. Like, and I'm trying to learn it, but it's just 2 + 2 = 8. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just not working. Right. So, yeah, there's some negatives that, you know, come along with serving. But I would wholeheartedly say that the positives outweigh the negatives for the most part.
Yeah.
And I would just go back tomorrow.
You would, yeah.
Maybe not today because of this drone thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was cool with, okay, maybe we get blown up by an IED, you know, whatever.
You were cool.
I'm not cool with some dude
sitting like,
far away
in a
flying an Amazon, you know, Temu special drone.
Right.
Fucking grenade strapped to it.
Yeah.
At my face.
That's
like, yeah, I'm not cool with that.
Fucked up.
Yeah, like, you know, like, there's lines, and I think that's it.
Yeah. No, I would think so. So I want to, you know, talk about boot camp a little bit, because, you know, for civilians and people that haven't gone through it, like myself and others, you know, we don't know what that experience is like. So can you give us like a brief overview of what, you know, Marine boot camp is like? And then I want to get back to where we were.
So the most standout point of it is they bus you in the cover of darkness. Like, so no recruit shows up at Paris Island in the daylight. It's dark, whether it's, you know, 2000 or 02. I think I got there 02, 03 in the morning.
Okay.
And you get off the bus and there's the infamous yellow footprints. And so when the bus pulls up and everybody's looking out the window and you can see Marine Corps Recruiting Station, Depot, Paris Island, and the big eagle globe and anchor and the American flag, and everyone's like, oh my God, you know, you got your long hair and everything else. Yet that quickly goes out the fucking window, because that door opens and a drill instructor comes blowing on the bus and says, get the fuck off my bus and stand on the yellow footprints. And it's game on instantly. And they do not let off the accelerator.
Because it's all gas, right? No brake, you're going.
They don't even know what a brake looks like.
Yeah.
It is wide open for the next 3 months of just all of it. And it's cool because when I got there, and I don't even know how I fell into this, but like when you get there, you know, you go through, you get your head shaved and all that's happening. And like, the first time I showered with 150 dudes, it was fucking weird.
Yeah.
A month later, it was not weird, you know, and I've seen them all, big, short, crooked, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, but like, it's
just part of it, you know?
Yeah. Like I've never in my life, I think I'd be, and when I'm talking like shower, I'm talking like a 20 by 20 shower. And you form assembly line. And you'd stand there, and they'd line you all up, and they would say, go. And there would be two recruits up there, butt-ass naked, bottles of shower gel. You walk by, both hands out, boom, boom. You get two squirts in your hand. And in the 30 seconds it takes you to make a loop through that shower. So imagine like an old high school rectangle with like the shower heads and the poles in the middle and shower heads along the outside.
Yeah, for football days, I can picture it. Yeah,
every one of them is turned on, smoking fucking hot.
Fuck.
And you don't stop.
Yeah.
You don't stop.
No time. You're just moving nonstop.
You just walk in and you're scrubbing and washing as you fucking go.
Wow.
And when you get out, you better be fucking clean, because if you're not, they'll fuck with you.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was just little things like that. And somehow I presented, I guess, traits that the drill instructor saw that they appreciated. And so in the Marine Corps, you have squad leaders, which are, you know, you'll have four squads normally in of guys that they'll break down the whole, your whole class, you know, 100 and some dudes, broke it down into four squads. And those four squads had a squad leader, and that dude was responsible for all 20 guys in his squad. And a lot of those dudes were getting interchanged until they found the guy. And then that was him. Well, somehow day one, they were like, you are what's called the guide on. So like you have all your four squads, and then there's one guy in front of everybody.
Okay.
And you would carry a staff with a flag on, and that represented your class and your class number. And it's called a guide on. And
that was you?
Me. Yeah, that was me. Dude, I had no, yeah, that's no like idea.
A pretty big deal, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And from day one till the last day. And I never relinquished it. And,
really?
Yeah. And
really? Wow.
The upside to that is I got a meritorious promotion coming out of boot camp. The downside to it is for the course of 3 months, when one dude fucked up, the squad leader and him would get fucked with. Oh, and you're the guide on, so you're ultimately responsible. So the, I was always getting smoked.
Yeah.
Like, period. Yeah. But, like, you know, it just, it's a part of the game, man. And I figured that out real quick at boot camp, especially. Okay, it's just a fucking game.
Yeah.
And the thousands and thousands and thousands of dudes, all the way back to a bar in Tun Tavern, Pennsylvania, where the Marine Corps was formed at.
Yeah.
I've done this. So if they can all do this, I sure as shit can do this. And you just get into the rhythm.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning, brush your teeth, you get dressed, you go to PT, you come back, they're going to feed you. They're going to drill you. They're going to teach you things. They're going to feed you again. They're going to teach you more things. They're going to fuck with you. They're going to PT you again. They're going to feed you dinner. They're going to come home. You're going to fucking scrub your balls. You're going to get on the rack and you're going to go to bed.
Yeah.
And guess what?
Do it all.
When reveille goes off in the wee hours of the morning, it's rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
For however many days, a couple months. And so, but you saw the dudes that couldn't. There was guys that just tapped out.
Yeah. Physically, mentally, or just
both?
Yeah.
I mean, the physically guys, if you got hurt physically, the Marine Corps was pretty good with, you know, giving you another shot. You know, it's not your fault that you rolled an ankle and broke an ankle.
Okay. Right.
You know, no need to kick that. Yeah. Because what if you really wanted to be there? And like, nothing but respect for those guys, especially the ones that came back through and completed it. But the ones that mentally tapped, get fucked.
Yeah,
I just don't got room for you in my life. Right. And like then, like I realized that then. Then that's something I have with me now. Like, My circle of friends has gotten smaller, and new people have been plugged in, and new people are in my life, and they all have that ability to be a killer. And what I mean by that is like, not the physical the word killer, but like, they can take it. And when the shit starts coming down, they don't bend knee, they don't break, they don't fold. They bear the weight, and they stand up, and they conduct business, and they get through it, and they're on to the next task. And so I really pride myself, and I'm extremely thankful to my friends for being that way and for being with me on this journey and allowing me to be a part of their journey that, you know, we call life. And it's crazy.
Yeah.
Especially what's going on in the world today.
Yeah, it's wild. Are there friends that you made in boot camp that you still are close with?
From boot camp, no. Right after boot camp, you know, you get out. I went to School of Infantry.
How did you do there?
Really good. I was a machine gunner. You know, that's kind of not big boy rules, but like, it's definitely not boot camp. You go out on the weekends, you go to the bar, you go to the strip club, like, just be at work on Monday type deal. So it was pretty cool. I don't really remember much of that. I just remember that, you know, we would have to go on these hikes, and we'd be carrying like 50 cals and Mark 19s, and, you know, those heavy weapon systems are like 65, 70 pounds, and that was brutal. But I wanted to be a machine gunner.
Yeah.
Accuracy by volume. That's what we did. And then you go to your unit, and I went to 3rd Battalion, 6th Marines, India Company. And that was my only unit that I served in. Did all three deployments with them, and to this day, friends with forever. We don't talk all the time. We might go months, a year, but when the phone rings, it's like we never
missed a beat.
Never missed a beat. And, you know, I didn't go to college. I don't have the frat experience or anything like that, but, you know, I would definitely put my relationship and my quote unquote frat buddies up against yours. Yeah. And that just because of how we had to form our bonds, and, you know, but the best friends I've ever had, and I love them to death, and I'd give my life for them, and they give them their life for me. And then I got friends that play that role and have that role in my life now that never served in the military, but they're just down. And I think that that's what keeps me grounded, keeps me going. And it's always competition, you know? I think I'm a big, huge fan of pushing the envelope. In Iraq, in Afghanistan, everywhere, you would see these huge signs on the bases, complacency kills. And it's ingrained in you.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you exit the wire, which is like a wire, the wire is like your little safe space. As soon as you exit the wire, you're in bad guy territory. And if you become complacent, that's what gets guys killed. And so, like, yeah, when you're doing that for years, you come back to the civilian life, that switch don't turn off.
Yeah.
So, like, if I was a janitor, I'm going to be the best fucking janitor. I'm going to have the brightest shining floors.
Right.
And,
it's ingrained in you.
I don't think that I have it in. I'm the guy that wins the lottery. And, yeah, I'm definitely going to go fuck off for a couple of days. But I'm going to work. Yeah. I'm never not going to work. I don't think I know how to. I don't know what to do with my hands, you know? So, like, that's where, like, that stuff that the military, I think, emphasizes and really ingrains is not so much on the civilian side. That's why veterans always flock to veterans and stick to veterans, because even other people don't have it, I feel like there's a big disconnect in common ground. But again, fortunately, I got buddies that were never military that got it. And so that they're a part of the circle, and it's one of the best blends then, because, you know, I got veteran buddies that are meeting my other buddies, and like, everything just clicks.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that's one of the greatest things that the military, especially the Marine Corps, produces, is just that ability to, you know, stare death in the face and, you know, I'm the one he sent. Bring it.
Yeah.
And that's the mentality of the Marine Corps. And it's cool. It's really, really cool. And it's an honor to be called a Marine.
Let's take a snack break.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. This snack break is brought to you by Jerky Beef Jerky. When late night editing episodes for the podcast, Jerky Beef Jerky keeps me fueled and ready to go with 11 grams of protein, high quality ingredients, and no nitrates or nitrites. With 5 different flavors to choose from, Jerky Beef Jerky, eat meat, repeat. Where I'd like to kind of go from here, I want to kind of jump back into, you know, you mentioned that first deployment to Ramadi and Fallujah, because that, from my understanding,
that one wasn't the wild one.
That wasn't the wild one.
No.
Okay, because I listened to a podcast. I saw you had it on your form, the Sean Ryan Show.
Yeah.
Love that guy. Love that podcast. Of course, Joe Rogan and such, but like Sean Ryan Show, for the listeners, that is one that I highly recommend. Just give him a shot. You know, listen to a couple episodes. But I know from listening to that, like Ramadi and Fallujah, I believe were two of the
hot spots. Right? They were the biggest ones in Iraq. And okay. I missed those big ones. So like I was there post the big pushes. My deployment to Afghanistan in 2010 in southern Helmand Province was called Operation Masharak, and it was the invasion of a town called Marja, Afghanistan.
Okay.
In Marja, Afghanistan was the rat lines to Pakistan ran through there. Like you had Sangin, you had Lashkar Gah, you had, you know, Marja, like the southern Helmand province. It's where they grew all the poppy. It's where they funded everything. And it was a heavily, heavily fortified Taliban fighting position, stronghold. I believe in one of the briefs prior to us going in, they put together this combined arms group of, you know, SEALs, Delta, you know, other three-letter assets, you know, SAS guys, like the top 1% of the 1% of the hitters, and like put like 80 of them in like a unit. And they tried to like go into this town and they got fucked up and couldn't do it and turn around. And you're talking the elite of the elite.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, call the Marines.
Holy
shit. Literally what they said. They're like, call the fucking Marines.
That's badass. Call the Marines, right? Yeah.
And so, again, to my understanding, that Battle of Marja was like the largest offensive operation conducted since Vietnam. And I believe it was like 7 or 10 battalions. So you're talking like almost 10,000 Marines.
Holy cow.
Got dropped off. Yeah, they did this thing called shaping, which is shaping the battlefield. So it's like all these thousands of Marines, you know, and imagine like a clock, you know, and on the very outer edge of the clock is all the Marines. And in the center where like the hands are is like downtown Marsha.
Okay.
Yep. And so like every day, you know, from the outside of the clock, you would move like 2 kilometers closer, 2 clicks closer, 2 clicks closer. And then on February, I think it was like February 10th or February 13th, something 14th, 2010, right around Valentine's Day, you were at the line of advance, which is you're about to go in. And everybody was around this. And this thing is massive. Like, it is not like a small little city. Like
what can you compare it to something over here?
Like Dauphin County.
Okay.
Maybe not that big, okay, but like it's massive.
So it's big.
Yeah, it's a lot of agricultural. It's a lot of then, you know, little villages and then, you know, some like more built up areas. So like it's a huge area. You know, like I'm not seeing the other dudes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
right, yeah.
It's not like that. It's not like
across.
Yeah. It's not like you're like clearing Lebanon.
Right.
Where like you have everybody online, you're coming down house by house. You know, like Fallujah and Ramadi. It wasn't like that. It was
okay.
It was larger scaled operations covering immense ground. And when it kicked, it was the wild, wild west. I mean, my squad that I was in charge of 12 Marines and handful of Afghanis. I mean, we declared troops in contact, which means we were in active combat engagements with the enemy. You know, my squad personally averaged like 1.4 times a day for 6 months.
Really?
Every day.
Every day.
Hanging and banging.
For 6 months.
Just getting it.
Holy cow.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
like, whoa, every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
I mean, it was insanity. Like, and not just like, oh, we're shooting our rifles at each other.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you want to shoot at me? Cool. I'm instantly calling in airstrikes. I'm instantly dropping artillery, mortars. Like, and you weren't like getting hit by like one or two bad dudes. You're getting hit by 30. You're getting hit by 40.
Even. RPGs and everything.
The works.
Yeah.
They would bring it. And they would fucking bring it. Like, and it was just wild. It was literally the wild, wild west. But yeah. Like, they let the dog off the leash and we just fucked them up.
We'll see how did it end. Yeah, how did
we just,
it end?
We just brought the hate.
Yeah.
In every...
Just kept it closing and closing.
Yeah. And
shrinking that circle.
Kind of everybody just met in the middle. It was like, all right, cool. Let's turn around and, yeah, maintain this ground. And
wow.
Yeah, so once, like, the initial push phase, which was, like, shit. They said it would take about, like, 7 days or 10 days or something. I think it was, like, 20, 25, something. I don't know. It was a while. And, yeah, we kind of, like, started establishing, like... at least for my company, you know, we had from like, you know, 12 o'clock come down over to 9 o'clock. Like,
okay.
So at that quadrant of a clock, I was in the company. And, if everybody's on the outskirts, like all the other squads and platoons. And then there was one structure in the middle of all this shit called the Yellow Schoolhouse.
Yellow Schoolhouse.
Yeah. If you Google Yellow Schoolhouse, Marja, Afghanistan, it comes up. Like, okay. It's like the thing.
Okay.
And yeah. I mean, my buddy, Dan Leith, AKA Meathead, you know, I mean, it took us, I think, 2 days to go like 400 yards to capture this.
Yeah.
Because they just had it so heavily fortified because it was a concrete structure. It had light. It had, you know, it was an old school.
Yeah.
And so it was a pivotal piece of ground. And, but that's where I ended up living. So, like, I'm living in the hornet's nest.
Yeah. What was that like?
It's awesome and terrifying and fucked all at the
same time.
Yeah. Because, yeah. You know, like, I go run a patrol.
It's the
best
and worst, right?
Yeah, I'd run a patrol. And then, like, my buddies, like, you know, Meathead, like, he'd be out on patrol. And, like, I'd be listening to where he's at. He's listening to where I'm at. I'm like, hey, bro, you want to meet up and smoke a cigarette? He's like, yeah, fuck yeah, dude. I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah.
And so, like, we just go hang out with our homies. And he's like, bro, we got this new gym. I'm like, fuck you, dude. You know what I got? He's like, what? I was like, I got a sandbag, a rope tied on it.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like.
Just straight up.
But like, that's where I wanted to be. Like, and I wanted to be in the heart of it. And like, yeah, one day they tried to overrun this Yellow Schoolhouse.
Okay.
And I mean, we just gave it to them.
Yeah.
I was in boxers and flip-flops, standing on top of one of our trucks, just rolling on a 50 cal. And like dudes, what? Like yeah, like the A&A dudes that are in our compound are just blasting RPGs out of the fucking compound. Like, yeah, we're calling in air. Like it was fucking awesome.
Yeah,
I mean it was awesome because no one died, but like if someone died, it'd probably been way less awesome. But like, again, I'm standing on top of this MRAP,
sandals, boxers.
Yeah, a pair of rainbow flip flops and a pair of boxers.
Just let them have
no Kevlar, no nothing. Because like,
dang.
I was sleeping. It was okay. Like, it was like 10 a.m. No, it was 10 a.m.
Oh, okay.
And like, I ran a night patrol, so like, I was dead asleep.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, and they were like, oh, yeah, fuck you. Here we come. And like, 360 degrees.
Yeah.
And they just tried to suck it down on top of us.
Holy cow.
And we were just banging away for life, and it was awesome. And you know, we repelled the tack, and you know, we're coordinating all the logistics to get, I mean, we're going through some ammo. So we're like coordinating logistics to like get shit back in and whatever. And
thousands
like,
around.
Yeah. And then like we all just like sit around or smoke cigarettes, just joking, laughing about like, are these motherfuckers? Like,
yeah.
And that was a Monday.
Dang.
And guess what? Like just because I got woke up because we were getting attacked at 10 a.m. doesn't mean I'm not going on my, you know, 1500, 1600 patrol. That's happening.
Yeah.
And so we're probably going to go out and get it again. Like that's just what we did. And I got blown up real bad by an IED.
Stay tuned for part 2 next week. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.